You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 4th, 2010. This is episode 143, Wells Tech Road Trip, Watertown, Wisconsin. Welcome back to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. We are in the first week of August, and joining me as usual, Sally. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you as usual this morning.
How are you?
I am great.
How's your summer going?
Summer is flying by. That's how it's going. We had school registration night last night. Hard to believe.
Holy cow.
It will be that time again before you know it. And I have a lot of contact with friends down south, and they actually started school yesterday in my hometown. So
really?
Some people start already.
That's not a year-round school situation. That's just
no, but they take a lot more holidays than we do, a lot of week-long breaks throughout the school year. So
okay.
Yeah, but I did have an interesting little snippet, side topic to share with you this morning, Martin. That I should have shared last week following up on our final web training. I had the opportunity to be on the campus of Martin Luther College, which is always a treat. It's a especially nice treat in the summertime because the flowers are just beautiful there. They have beautiful grounds, take a great care there. But during that time, I got to meet up with a couple of Wells Tech listeners, which is a lot of fun. And it was kind of done in a funny way via Twitter because I wasn't really paying attention to the world around me. I was kind of focused on teaching this final web class, and so I got home after class one night and checked my Twitter feed, and there was a tweet from Perry Lund, and you'll recognize Perry's name, I'm sure, if you listen at all to the Wells Tech Podcast, because he's a great contributor to our conversation. He's from Grace Lutheran Church down in Oskaloosa, Iowa.
Yes,
that's a word I didn't know how to say before the Wells Tech Podcast started. But yeah. That's my friend Perry. Great conversations we've had with him. Never seen him face to face. Only seen his little avatar on Twitter. And so Perry tweeted that he saw me at MLC, and I'm thinking, I sure didn't see him or recognize him. So I was on the lookout the next day, and I had to actually walk up to a strange gentleman and say, "Are you by chance Perry?" And as it turned out, it was Perry, a lot taller than I expected him to be, a lot taller than he sounds in his Wells Tech comments. But I did get the chance to meet Perry face to face. The other person that I met and that was in this Twitter conversation was Pastor Dan Walters, who serves out in New York. I can't remember exactly the city where he serves, but he was actually a classmate a year ahead of my husband at seminary, so I knew Dan from seminary years. But Dan has a special place in my heart because he is included in David Pogue's The World According to Twitter book. Which is a compilation book where David Pogue, who writes for the New York Times, he's a tech writer, put questions out on Twitter. For instance, what's your strangest habit? And people would respond in 140 characters or less to these questions. So here's some examples. What's your strangest habit? I drink stuff out of measuring cups as opposed to real cups. Or sometimes, just before sitting on the couch, I make a full turn to the right, 360 degrees. So people would share these. They were really entertaining. And then Pogue compiled them into this book with about 2,500 of the responses to all these different funny questions that he asked out on Twitter. Well, as it turned out, Pastor Walters shared several of these, and one actually made it on the back cover of Pogue's book, which only three are included on the back cover. So there's our claim to fame, Wells Techers. We have one amongst us who's on the back cover of David Pogue's book. So I had to take my book with me
to get it signed.
Get it autographed. Pastor Walters actually received an autograph copy from David Pogue himself, but he was willing to autograph mine, and I have to read you his inscription. He said, "To Sally, the only person I know who ever found me in this book." Isn't that great?
What was his what was his Twitter?
It was make up a concept for a doomed TV show, and he wrote Law and Order DMV for Department of Motor Vehicles. You can imagine that that wouldn't go over real well.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Fun stuff. Anyway,
we had some very creative listeners, yes. And they're everywhere, even in New Ulm.
Oh, yes. They're everywhere.
And so they come to us, but during this summer, we're going to them on our road trip. And we've been all over the place. If you haven't been to the show notes website, Sally, you keep a map there that kind of documents our travels. And pretty much, and last week, we went a great distance down to Texas. Not so much today, right?
Well, today we're kind of in the middle. We are in the western Wisconsin
district. We're not going far from the mothership, yes.
Yeah, located right between the two of us, visiting Watertown, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We heard from Drew Willems, who teaches 7th and 8th grade there at Trinity St. Luke's Lutheran School. Mm-hmm. He's also their technology director, and he was willing to share some info with us about their hardware setup in their school setting, particularly about netbooks that they're using in the classroom.
Yeah,
really interesting conversation with Drew.
Yeah, nice mobile setup they have there. They've just started this, and I think that's the position a number of schools are in, is just trying to figure out how to use computers in a non-computer lab format. You probably have a computer lab at your school, right, Sally?
We do. We have a few in the classroom, but mainly we pull them out and bring them to the computer.
And I think that would be the case for most of our Wells Elementary schools especially. And that's probably something we'll see changing pretty dramatically over the next, 4 or 5 years? If Drew's situation is typical of a lot of our other schools, I think a lot of educators are going to be looking for ways to get technology more integrated into the curriculum as opposed to a classroom period where everybody gets marched over to the computer lab and then they work on the computer and then they're not on the computer for the rest of the day. It just seems like a computer is becoming more and more an invaluable tool to the educational process.
And it was really wonderful of Drew to share his experience in. Hopefully we'll get to hear from him more as time progresses and they get more experience.
Absolutely. So let's listen to our interview with Drew Willems from Trinity St. Luke's in Watertown, Wisconsin. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Drew Willems from Trinity St. Luke's in Watertown, Wisconsin. Good morning, Drew.
Good morning to you.
Thank you for coming on the show and continuing our road trip. I travel to Watertown quite often, got a daughter in prep, and you are at a combined campus there, Trinity St. Luke's. Where is the school exactly?
Well, our lower grade campus is on the corner of 5th Street and Western Avenue, so we call that our Western Avenue campus.
Right.
And then our upper grades, 5th through 8th grade, is on the campus along with St. Luke's Church, and that's on the corner of 3rd and Clark Street, so we affectionately call that our Clark Street campus.
Gotcha.
Very original.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been there, what you do, what your hobbies are, etc.
Sure. I graduated in 1989 from DMLC, and my wife and I have lived here in Watertown for all 21 years of my ministry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is a little unusual, and I would have never thought that, but you never know what the Lord has in mind for you. We have 5 children together. And it's a difficult time in their ages right now. Let's see if I can remember them correctly. 17.
You just add one every year, Drew.
Well, 17, 16, 13, 11, and 10.
Okay.
So grade schoolers
and high schoolers.
Yep. I'm the upper grade teacher over here. There's 5 of us at the Clark Street campus. And I teach 5th through 8th grade students a computer application class, which I write the curriculum for myself. And then I teach 6th through 8th grade science. I have an 8th grade Saxon math class. I teen teach 6th grade catechism. And then I have religion and art to my homeroom. So as you can see, I'm a typical Wells teacher, a jack of all trades,
lot of
master
things.
Of none.
Yep. Yep.
I've been the director of technology here at Trinity St. Luke's for 14 years, which was a position they asked me to develop and to fill. And we have about 200 students in school, so between the technology fee we charge and third source funding from our parent group, I have about $7,000 of a technology budget to spend for the next school year. So that's a little bit about that. My hobbies, I like to read quite a bit. I'm finishing up being the chairperson of the program committee for the Wisconsin Lutheran State Teachers Conference.
Yeah.
We're always looking for presenters. So okay. Anybody listening in the audience, give me a call. I'm the vice chairman of the Lakeside Lutheran Athletic Booster Club. And for fun this summer, I've been into politics. I'm a statewide coordinator for Dave Westlake's campaign for U.S. Senate.
Okay.
So, enough to keep me busy.
Oh, for sure.
Sounds like a busy schedule. Well, we were excited to have the opportunity to visit Western Wisconsin District. You aren't that far from Milwaukee, but in a different district in our synodical divisions, and the opportunity to talk to you specifically about your hardware and networking setup there at Trinity St. Luke's. And I'm guessing with the split campus, that keeps you really busy as technology director. Maybe you can give us a little bit of an idea of how what kind of computer setup you have and network as well, and how many staff you're supporting, and whether it's school and church, just to kind of give us a feel for that. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that are in your similar position and trying to support networks and computer hardware.
Sure. With two campuses, we have 14 teachers, excuse me, and then two secretaries and two teachers' aides. Excuse me, don't have that teaching voice ready to go yet this summer. I do not specifically have any church duties. However, the St. Luke's Church is attached to our Clark Street campus, so we share internet connection. But other than that, the church is kind of on their own. I do help out occasionally troubleshooting some problems. But so what I've done at both campuses here at TSL is I've set up networks that work just the same, and that way, you know, all the hardware and all the infrastructure would be the same and be easy to maintain. However, over at the little kid campus, pre-K through 4, the teachers have mostly gone to using smart boards over there, and there's some standalone computers in the classrooms. And they don't really use the network per se. They use the internet and, you know, some saving of files just on local computers, not on the network. Over here for the 5th through 8th graders, we have a computer lab that has 25 computers in it, and we also have 20 Acer notebook computers on a wireless mobile computer cart. And then all the teachers and all the students over here do have a network folder or directory where they save all their information. So in that way, we use, in 5th through 8th grade, we have the kids use the computers a whole lot more, whereas in the lower grades, it's more of a teaching tool to integrate more into the lessons.
So with the mobile cart, that's interesting, and I don't know that a lot of our schools are using that right now. How does that play out in a classroom setting? Does each child then get a laptop at the beginning of class, so they're sitting at their desk with an open laptop, or explain a little bit more about that process?
Sure. The answer would be yes. we just got these computers in last January, so the second semester of last school year. And I started using them first, of course, and being the director of technology, you have to lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I have a master's in education with an emphasis in integrating technology in the classroom. So that is kind of my specially trained area, is using technology in classroom lessons. So I developed some units using one-to-one computing and the netbooks, specifically designed for my science class.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other teachers saw how the kids were using them and so interested in the technology, and that's just what they talked about during the lunch hour. So they would use them as well a little differently. Sometimes they augment a lesson, especially with the internet where you're researching and looking for information. Sometimes the whole lesson is built around them. When I was in my master's class, they always made it very important to emphasize that you should use technology in a different way in your classes. Don't do something on a computer that could just be done on pencil and paper, uh-huh, the old-fashioned way. However, after using it for about 6 months, you could use it either way. The students are so adept at technology. It's become just a part of their life that they've enjoyed taking notes on a computer way more than they do in a science classroom, in a notebook or a ring binder. But yet they understand the fact that there are certain things you can do in school with technology that you just can't do without it.
That's a wonderful example. I'm so glad we had the opportunity to hear your story, Drew, and just really exciting one-to-one computing live experience, mm-hmm, going on there in Watertown. What about the computer lab then? Do you use that with the students, these same students, as well as their time that they go to the lab and work? And then just having all those different options available to them, I'm guessing, is really assisting with that.
Yeah, we've had a computer lab here with 5th through 8th graders for 11 years. And about 3 years ago, it just got to be in demand so much where, from 10 to 11:30, two different teachers wanted to use a computer lab. So we knew we had to do something else. We knew laptops or netbooks were in the future. We just had to save up a little bit of money for them. I had developed certain lessons to use in the computer lab, but you got to take all of your materials downstairs to the lab with you. You got to make sure to, bring everything out of the lab with you. It's just a little more natural to be in your homeroom, in your classroom with a laptop, and you can take it just like you can a book and work in your group, in your small peer group, or you can work individually at your desk, or you can take it across the room and share with somebody else. There's just so much more collaboration done one-to-one, mm-hmm, than there is in a computer lab.
Have you noticed?
That's been a big plus.
Oh, great. Have you noticed any disadvantages of kind of the mobile experience versus the computer lab itself?
I'm going to say no. I know the one disadvantage classroom teachers would say is there's so much more freedom. There's a little less structure.
Mm-hmm.
But as you set up your lessons, you build in your tolerances with students,
right,
what they can and can't do. So yeah, it's just, same thing like teaching a computer lab. There's just more individual time. There's more freedom, not only of working and talking, but, of decisions to make when doing an assignment or working on a lesson.
Uh-huh.
And some teachers are uncomfortable with that. I really enjoy that aspect of one-to-one computing, whereas some people might have to get used to it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit. Some people probably are not familiar with the mobile cart concept. Did you buy a true mobile cart where you've got charging stations, so you plug them in there and then kind of the internet goes with you there? Or how does that work?
Yes, I had looked at the option of just buying the netbooks. What I did is we bought 20 Acer netbooks. They're called Aspire 1 Pros. So they're kind of not top of the line, but they're not basement bargain either.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 10-inch screen. I believe they have a 1.6 gigahertz processor. They have 2 gigabytes of memory. And they do have a webcam built in with them.
Okay.
I haven't used that yet for class. But I decided to go with a cart. First of all, it's padlocked, so you can store them safely. Second of all, they do have a built-in charging station then with the laptop cart. So that's, you know, about a $1,200 purchase.
Right.
But it beats trying to spread out your netbooks throughout the whole school, trying to charge them up overnight.
Right.
Them.
Right.
The battery life is almost 6 hours.
Okay.
So, you know, when each classroom is done with them, I just have them as a matter of order and practice, plug them back into the cart, wheel the cart to the next room. But you wouldn't have to. If you just taught in a self-contained classroom, you could use them most of your classroom day without having to have a cord and mm-hmm. dragging that all around the room. So that works out very nicely as well.
Great.
And what about the student reaction to it? I'm thinking hardware-wise, you know, it is a smaller screen, a smaller keyboard. Are they comfortable with the technology?
Students are wonderfully adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have a problem with that at all. You know, we have the little mouse pad on the netbook. The keyboard is smaller. They do have smaller hands than I do. If you guys know me, you know I'm a very tall person. So we don't have any problems with the students doing that. The adults do. Almost every teacher that teaches uses their own computer on their desktop or uses their own laptop. They never use a netbook. In fact, the picture that you will put up for this podcast shows me on the first day using a netbook to teach with. And I did it just to be a demonstrator and just to do it to see how long things would take. But, yeah, I don't like them at all. They have no problem going back and forth. They have no problem between Microsoft Office Productivity Suite, and then on the netbooks, I put on OpenOffice, the free, it's a good word for the Wells, the free download. After 2 or 3 days, they can work seamlessly between the two. The adults, like me, have trouble going between those two different platforms, but the students are very adaptable, and they have absolutely no problem with that.
What was the cost for one netbook?
I have no idea right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I was going to say it was probably about $400
mm-hmm.
when I got them.
Okay.
Now I know they are quite a bit cheaper. So I think $285 was just the price I saw.
Okay. So it is a little investment you have to plan for. So what's coming up in the future? Are you planning on continuing your computer lab or moving toward more mobile carts, or what's up in the next couple of years for technology there?
Well, the first immediate thing for next school year, 2011-2012, we're going to get the teachers all laptops
mm-hmm.
so that they can be more mobile with their classes. With the wireless notebooks or a wireless laptop, you know, you could take the kids outside for class and, you know, take your computers with you as well, or from room to room, or for Phi Ed teacher, you know, can do their grades or grading right there on the computer. So it would probably be about two more years down the line before we would get some more netbooks. I would envision getting rid of the computer lab simply because you're just tied down, you have space limitations, you don't have the freedom to develop lessons the way you do with the mobile laptop.
I would think,
and I would bet, Marty, in a couple of years, on a school supply list, you're going to be buying pencils and crayons and rulers and netbooks at Walmart.
Right.
You know, it's just going to become very much more cost effective, and it's going to become a part of life.
Yep, more schools are talking about it, even at the grade school level. Absolutely.
Our school supply list had a USB drive this year, and we shopped yesterday, and they had them for $12 for a 4 gig one, and it used to be 4 gig was huge, so, and very expensive.
I bought 128K about 10 years ago for $76. Prices are much better. Yeah, this is the first year we have it required that everybody has to have USB flash drive as well.
Interesting.
It's just the way things are going, and it's affordable, which is good.
Yep. Very good. Thank you, Drew, for the time, and blessings on your continuing ministry there in Watertown, Wisconsin. Maybe we can have you on a year or so from now when you've had a couple years now under your belt with mobile computing. I think that is definitely something that we're going to keep an eye on, and our listeners, I think, are all thinking about that, at least those in the educational circles. Thanks again.
Well, thank you, Marty and Sally, for the opportunity, and keep up the good work. I enjoy the Wells podcast, and you always have very applicable things that make teachers think about technology and how to use them and challenge their thought process. So keep up the good work.
We do our best. Thank you. Appreciate
that.
So they've, Sally, started, I think, the process, and it looks like they've got a good start, and so far, good experiences.
Yeah, I think the Acer is a nice little computer to start with. We actually got one here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye.
Well, that was part of your free computer thing, right?
That's right. They had a program. We could try it out for a while, and then they gave us a really cut price on it. I think we paid like $200 for the little Acer that we got. I was doing some searching to include links in the show notes, and I see that they aren't selling the Acer One Pro that Drew mentioned specifically anymore. Mainly because those first netbooks that came out all ran XP.
Right.
And now with Windows 7, the netbooks can support Windows 7. Vista didn't work on them, but Windows 7 does. So they have a whole new generation of netbooks out there running Windows 7. So check out links in the show notes to some of that. I also found a few links to different netbook carts that are available out on the web from different vendors.
I have a feeling that in future shows we'll be talking a lot more about educational / mobile computing. So that's an exciting area.
All right, you heard it here, folks. He made that prediction. We'll see if it happens.
That's not. I'm not going out on a limb there, I don't think. All right, let's move to picks of the week.
Well, my pick of the week is a new beta site that I discovered. Not quite sure who pointed me this direction. I'm sure from some of my reading in RSS feeds or Twitter, but it's a site called Frobee, Frobee.com, F-R-O-B-E-E, and it allows
Isn't
you
that that attachment you put on your vacuum that gives a haircut? That's not the Frobee?
No, that's the Flobee.
Oh, Flobee. Okay, got it.
We won't go there, Martin.
Not that I ever owned one. I don't have enough hair to make a dent in that. But
all right. Getting back on track here, folks. The Frobee, I'm not going to say it right, Frobee.com allows you to upload photos and create your own flash slideshow, which you can embed then in your website. Once you upload the photos, it adds transitions between the photos, but you can control that, adjust it to your liking. And you can also add captions that show up after the photo transitions, then a title will show up across the bottom of the photo, or you can actually place it wherever you want it to be. When you're happy with the slideshow creation process. You just click a button and it generates a SWIFT file, a .swf, which is Flash format. And you download that actually in a zip file that contains a sample HTML document with embed code for that Flash file. So once you have that embed code, you can upload the SWIFT file to your own website and use that sample embed code to make it work on your website. And I did a quick experiment on my Final Web sample site, and I'll have a link in the show notes to a page showing a embedded slideshow that I created with Froby. So check that out, and if you're interested, we can share more details on how I did that exactly, but it worked pretty quickly and easily with my Final website.
That's cool. It offers a little bit more controls than maybe using something like Flickr, which has a slideshow as well where you can upload pictures, and then you can also embed Flickr slideshows on your website. But it is difficult to do anything beyond that. So for something like this, it sounds like you've got full control over transitions and playback timing. It looks like you can even add captions.
Yes.
So that seems like if you have just something very specific that you want to, you know, kind of a presentation, this sounds like a quick and easy tool to do that with.
Right, and you know, you can overlay text right into your images as well. So if you wanted to say something, you could do it by adding text, not just with the captioning feature, but pre-editing your pictures, your images that you upload to include text. So mm-hmm. lots of possibilities there.
Right, very cool. And Froby is a freebie.
That's right.
Okay.
Unlike the Flowbee, but we won't go back there.
See, those kind of comments that I make are, those would be something that my kids would probably roll their eyes.
Thinking rolling eyes is appropriate for that.
Have you heard the one, if a parent offers advice alone in the forest, do their children still roll their eyes?
That's pretty good. Yeah, I could see my kids.
Yeah. All right. My pick of the week is a standard Microsoft Office product that comes along with the Office suite, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. This is one that's maybe not as well known and well used, but I use it a lot, and I think there's some value in the church and school office or in the pastor's study or whatever, called OneNote. And with the new release of Office 2010, OneNote has been upgraded as well. They've offered some synchronization with online sharing on Windows Live accounts, those kinds of things. But basically, OneNote is a note-taking tool, but a little bit more than that, where it allows you to embed audio and video files. It allows you to embed any kind of document, so it can truly act as a collection point for all documents related to a project, which is how I use it. So I've got I'll take meeting notes, and you can embed mind maps, which we use a lot here in the Senate office, and you and I use, Sally, all the time. And then OneNote collects it all together and in a kind of a folder format where you've got tabs and folders and pages within folders. So it's a similar concept to what happens in the analog world. And they've done a nice job with this product. It's very easy to use and very functional. It's lightweight. You can capture screenshots to it. If you have something that, you have a computer that's pen-enabled, you could actually write notes in it, just like you could on a notepad. Again, it's not a standalone product. I think you have to buy it with the suite, but it comes along with most of the packages of Microsoft Office. And I've talked in the past on the show about Evernote. This is a very similar tool, and it's kind of catching up to Evernote in its ability to synchronize over the internet to different devices. That was one of the reasons I kind of stayed away from it now. It's kind of evolved into a true Evernote competitor, and it works real seamlessly with the other Office products and Outlook. You can save emails over to it and do timestamps. It has OCR recognition if you put a saved scan into OneNote, it will do some OCR, and you can actually search on the contents of it. Very full-featured and mature product at this point. I guess this is really popular with students who do note-taking in class, of course, and other kinds of report writing. It's a great tool. That's
so
OneNote.
You answered most all of my questions, Martin. I was going to ask you about the Evernote comparison, mm-hmm. but in regard to the mobile applications, is there an iPhone app and a Droid app?
Not yet. OneNote? I think that's forthcoming. It works obviously with Windows phones at this point, where you can add notes and edit notes, but I'm assuming that we will be seeing those kind of apps on Android. You can go to Windows Live, of course, on an iPhone or an Android phone and do it through the browser and still get a similar experience, but I think we'll see some more customized or app-specific applications coming to the iPhone and Android, of course. So, but I think it's a good tool.
Are those kind of apps for Evernote?
There are, yes. So, again, it's a little bit short there. Mm-hmm. So it depends on where you spend a lot of your time. If you spend a lot of your time on Windows and in the Office suite, OneNote is really a tool worth looking into. Because you get it along with most of the packages, and most people really don't even notice that it's there. They spend most of their time in Word or whatever. And it's a lot more flexible for note-taking and those kinds of things than Word. You see a lot of people using Word for meeting notes and those kinds of things, and OneNote is actually superior for those applications.
Good to know.
All right, shall we move on to our community feedback?
Yeah, I think it's about time, because we have a lot of great feedback to share, starting with comments related to our last show when we were down in Houston, Texas. We talked with Sally Valesky about her use of Shepherd Staff, which is church management software. We had a couple of follow-up comments and links related to that. First, we heard from Pastor Johan Kawi, who is a blogger at A Shepherd Story and also serves Trinity, El Paso, Texas. So Pastor Kawi commented that Concordia Technology, who created Shepherd Staff, has a brand new product. They're just getting ready to launch. It's called Church 360, and you can see it at church360.org. You can even follow them on Twitter if you're so inclined. And this is actually a web-based church management system. Mm-hmm. So we will be watching closely the development and product launch of Church 360 and see how that goes for them.
I've been trading emails with the product manager for Concordia Technology Solutions, and we haven't hooked up yet, but he definitely wants to bring us up to speed, meaning the Synod, because we do have a relationship with CTS and their Shepherd Staff product, and I think there's probably something that we can probably share in the very near future about its feature set and how it might be something that our Wells churches could take advantage of. So again, I don't know anything about it, I think we'll continue that relationship, and it sounds like Concordia is interested in doing that, so there may be maybe some good news there in the future.
Very good. Another follow-up on that same podcast, one of the main things that we shared from Sally that she was willing to share with our listeners was their time and talent survey mm-hmm. from Abiding Word down in Houston.
Awesome.
It was just really well done, and I kind of polled the class, sent out a Wells Tech listserv message last week asking if anyone else was willing to share similar surveys, and we heard from Dan Scheffel, who serves as parish administrator at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Onalaska, Wisconsin, and Dan was willing to email us a survey, but interestingly enough, they have a different survey for adults versus the teens in their congregation, kind of focusing in with the teens on areas that they specifically may have gifts to serve in. So that was an interesting differentiation that they made there.
Great idea.
And another thing that Dan shared was they call it Serving My Lord, a one-page document with scripture references. As you're doing time and talent surveys, just a really good way to stop for a moment and kind of consider the scripture references in relation to your time and talents. So all just really great documents. And an exciting thing that we've done now is we've set up a brand new page on our Wells Tech Wiki to house all these documents. And it's kind of a starting page of what we hope will be an expanding area of our wiki as we explore more and more church office work and the documents and things that, that church office workers use to make their jobs more efficient. So listen up, folks, this fall as we start a new series looking specifically at those church office workers and their various forms and things that they might make use of. Mm-hmm. And check out this new wiki page where we'll be housing this information. We'll be sure to have a link in the show notes.
Very good.
And another comment from Pastor Calway regarding discussion, Martin, that we had. We actually had some community questions about online church directories. Mm-hmm. People are regularly asking, you know, how can we put our photos online but keep them secure? How can we share, address and contact information online but keep it all secure? And Pastor Calway had a great link to share with us to Olin Mills online directory, and I know many of our churches do online do regular photo directories. And what he had to share with us was the fact that when you sign up for a photo directory project with Olin Mills Company, a free online directory comes along with the package.
Mm-hmm.
And it is password protected, and they actually have a link that I can include in the show notes to a sample one of these online photo directories. And it looked really nice, and the password is secret, S-E-C-R-E-T. So if you want to check it out, you can log in with that password and see what the Olin Mills product is like.
Yeah, I think most of the directory people, I think LifeTouch does the same thing. So if you've got a photo directory shooting coming up, you may want to explore that with your particular vendor, and they may be able to do something for you.
That's great. I never would have thought along those lines, but very logical connection to make with that directory project. So, next up from the Twitterverse, we heard from several of our community listeners. Maren McPeak tweeted that she was looking for an idea for collecting online donations, so a method for online payments, and she got a response from Jason Schmidt recommending PayPal, which is what they use at their congregation. And I'm just wondering if anybody else has good or bad experience with collecting online donations, and we'd love to hear from you as well.
Common question. We get that a lot.
Exactly. Perry Lund from Oskaloosa, Iowa, shared a link to ChemDoodle, which is a drawing tool for chemistry for science education. And it's not a free tool, but it looks like it's extremely powerful. So if you're a chemistry or science teacher, you may want to check out this link. And in response to that, our friend Gail Potretz sent us a link to it's a science textbook, basically, in ebook format for the iPad. It's called Elements. Mm-hmm. And if you check out this link, you'll see some screenshots, even just for the curious as to what ebooks can actually look like. It's really a different experience than you would expect.
Very interactive, yeah.
It is very interactive. It's very image-driven and just a really exciting way, you would think, to study the various chemical elements, and maybe something, again, a science teacher might want to make use of in a classroom setting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if nothing else, it's definitely a look at what the future of textbooks might be in an ebook format. So check out that interesting link from Gail.
Thanks, Gail.
And Gail also tweeted that there was some exciting news from YouTube that they now allow up to 15-minute videos.
Yep.
The previous cutoff had been 10 minutes, and so just last week they announced that they're increasing that limit to 15 minutes.
So if your pastor preaches 15 minutes or less now, he can go up on YouTube.
You can get him in there.
If not, I still think Vimeo is a great choice as well, which is unlimited.
Yes. We heard from our friend Steve Zambo, who runs Salty Earth Pictures, and he's launched a new video product or stream, I guess you could call it, called PC's Take. And basically what this is Pastor Clark Schultz is reviewing and commenting on the latest and hottest movies in the big and small screen. So a pastor's look at movies, reviews from a Christian perspective. And they have a couple of movies that they've reviewed already. One's called Inception, and the other is Toy Story 3. Mm-hmm. The movies are out on YouTube. You can also like their Facebook page called PC's Take, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
So, great idea. I like the concept.
And I think there's lots of space for those little short snippet videos, mm-hmm, from a Christian perspective, and I think this is a great idea, like you said, Martin.
Yep.
Via Digo, Gail Potratz is back sharing a link with us called Learn It in 5, and I was excited by this. The tagline for Learn It in 5 says, how-to videos for the technology classroom. So if you're looking to implement some technology, Web 2.0 digital technology in your classroom, and maybe you don't have a long time to learn the technology, here are 5-minute or less video tutorials that will get you up to speed. And they've got blogging, social media, video tools, wikis, podcasting, and Web 2.0 lessons covered. So check out this link if you're interested at all in some of the new Web 2.0 technology. I think this is a great way to learn visually. Seeing someone demonstrate it just goes a long way towards being able to do it effectively.
Yep. I'm just looking at the page now, and you have all kinds of really cool demos here. VoiceThread, which we've talked about in the past, Skype, YouTube, and copyright issues, Digo itself, Google Reader, Hootsuite, we've talked about in the past, all kinds of cool stuff here. Great website.
Yeah. Thanks, Gail, for that link. And last up in our community feedback section, I had an email from Deacon Mike, who's at Deer Valley in Phoenix, Arizona, and he was putting together a men's Bible study program and wanted to make use of some web conferencing. So real-time online collaboration or discussion using web cameras, using shared desktops so that you could see each other's computer or see the leader's computer and maybe view a PowerPoint or something along those lines. And he had looked at GoToMeeting and other options, but the cost was pretty much prohibitive on some of those options, and he was wondering if there was a freebie kind of tool that does web conferencing. And I pointed him to the website View, Martin, VYEW.com. We've talked about that before on the show, but not recently, so I thought it was worth mentioning to our listeners again. And View allows just what he was looking for, the collaborative nature of the web, and at a free price tag. Mm-hmm. So if you are making use of something like that in your congregation, we'd love to hear about it and hear your experience, and please share with the class.
Very good. View is, we've tried it maybe a year and a half ago, I want to say.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah, and I think it had some real potential. I think they were still working out some of the bugs, but probably worth a relook. And again, it's not going to cost you anything to try it. And if you find something that meets a ministry need, boy, go for it.
Yep, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yep. Okay, that wraps up community feedback, I assume. A lot of it.
We'd love to hear from our listeners.
We do. And the best way to get a hold of us is go to our show notes website, wellstech.wells.net. You can always send us an email directly, wellstech@wells.net. Love to hear from you. We've got voicemail options. Sally mentioned the listserv, all kinds of ways to get in touch. And our Facebook page, that is facebook.com/wellstech. Come and be our friend. Next week, we are headed out west. We have not ventured much past the Mississippi in our travels yet, so we are headed way out west to Washington to talk to our good friend John Shoesmith. you might remember from previous conversations we've had with John. He is our resident closed captioning expert, so we're getting back to John with some follow-up questions on closed captioning. Where is the industry right now? YouTube's launched their own closed captioning service with YouTube videos. What does that mean? And some other advice, as well as pointing people to some great resources that John has put together for us. So tune in next week as we travel to the Pacific Northwest District. Let's close the show with the music of Dawn Galhar, her album Inspirations, and the song Christ Be My Leader. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.